He's got the knowledge.
Because once again, I have to come on there and talk about how right I am once again. In anything that it comes to sports.
He's got the questions.
I'm going to lose it. Are you kidding me? What are we doing here?
He's got the guests.
20th head coach in Fresno State history here, Matt. Is it hard to believe sometimes still the 20th head coach here in program history?
It's all moved really quickly here over the course of the last 5-6 weeks. But super excited to be here.
Phil Bonatti is the voice for the Central Valley sports leader. Behind the Bench starts now. Brought to you by Helena Agri.
That's right. Behind the Bench here on 1430 ESPN Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader, here on this Monday, December 1st. Monday, December 1st for everyone out there who is listening, however you're listening. Big thank you to you for tuning in here in the final month of 2025. That's right. We are here and live again. Let's see if we can remember how to do this. It's been a while. We have not been behind the bench has not been on since about last Tuesday, but that's because of Thanksgiving holiday, all that great stuff, and we got a lot to react to when it comes to that. Of course, so much to get into with all of the football over the weekend, all of the sports that have been going on over the weekend as well. It is good to be here and talking it with you. Of course, you can be in on that conversation with the Lee's Air Hotline, 559-320-1430. The way to get in the conversation, that's right, 559-320-1430. The way to get a hold of us and be on with Phil Bonatti here on Behind the Bench. We are course streaming on Facebook, Twitch, and YouTube. ESPN Fresno, the content title, the name of the channels you can find us at as well. Big thanks to Tony D for tossing it to us from the previous hour. Of course, Tony D Show, Sportsline Bulldog Hour, Tony D from 2 to 3 on weekdays. You can catch it on our ESPN Fresno app or the 1430 ESPNFresno.com website. Taking a look at our weather check, sitting at 54 degrees and sunny today. It cleared out a little bit. It was a little cloudy this morning, but hey, the sun is out shining, ready to say hello on this afternoon. Of course, 50s, going to be pretty much through the rest of this week here, mid to high 50s. Could be seeing the 30s in the evening side. I'm looking at 39 low tomorrow. In the middle of the night, 38 potentially Thursday. So bundle up a little bit, folks. It's getting chilly here, but we are in December. So go figure in terms of it. You know what's coming. Good show today. A lot to talk about, a lot to catch up on. I mean, that's right. We had 5 days of stuff to talk about and come back to when it comes to all the things that kind of happened over the Thanksgiving weekend, we hope. And I hope you all had a wonderful Thanksgiving weekend for the folks out there who are listening. Hope it was safe, wonderful, and everyone got the full tummies they deserved of football and food out there as well. We're going to talk about, of course, Fresno State Bulldogs football season coming to an end, 8-4 record to wrap it up as they beat San Jose State to wrap up their final Mountain West game of the season and of the foreseeable future. And then we got the Cellon Arena reaction. I was at the game yesterday. We'll talk about that game a little bit later in this hour. Of course, that's going to be kind of the predominant conversation is Fresno State here in this first hour. Of course, we'll do my Who's Been Oddie, Who's Been Nice in the 4 o'clock hour. Discuss some hot topics for sure from the weekend and get you set for Patriots and Giants. Yes, that's Monday Night Football coming up tonight. Me and Ed's Major Wager with Carter, myself, Joe, and company out there. Sergio out there as well. He's always holding it down for us folks out there. Just a heads up, tonight at Major Wager, you can have a chance to win Harlem Globetrotter tickets tonight. Save Bart Center, February 19th is the date of being able to watch the Harlem Globetrotters, which I believe are turning 100 years old next year in 2026. So if you want a chance to be a part of the 100-year tour, be sure to get your tickets at Save Bart Center on February 19th. And like I said, if you want a chance to win tickets tonight, be sure to stop by Major Wager tonight for a chance to win tickets to the Harlem Globetrotters. So there you go. All right. Excited to talk about all the different things and happenings in the world of sports, and we've got 2 hours to go through it. I feel like that's not enough time, as we always seem to run out of time here on this program, but can't wait to get into it with the folks here. And can't ask for a couple of good guys to be here with us in terms of that here on the Thanksgiving come down. We got Tanvir, we've got Jorge in on the other side of the glass. Gentlemen, the only question I have usually on these Mondays when I begin my show is, how was your weekend?
Yeah, I thought Thanksgiving was pretty good.
All right.
I had a mac and cheese dish that I created.
Yes.
And that was always fun.
Yes.
And that's the first time that I ever created something like that, and okay, everybody liked it. So, yeah, that's the positive of my week. Otherwise, Thanksgiving games were fun overall. And yeah, the weekend was nice to me. 49ers win, so we're
nice. Good to hear. My it was a point of contention, the mac and cheese contention, in terms of whether it was needed to be in there in the menu, because my brother, his girlfriend, was trying to make a ham dish, and it just didn't kind of turn out the way it was supposed to, and so they pivoted sharply to mac and cheese. And my father, who, you know, he is as true to the pilgrim sensibilities of what Thanksgiving dinner should be as anybody, because he's got his Massachusetts sensibilities to him. So he is true to the pilgrim way of Thanksgiving. And the introduction of mac and cheese to the dinner table was one that caused a lot of strife in our family, because the idea that the pilgrims did not have cheese or macaroni. Certainly foreign to the idea of it, because that was an Italian idea in terms of it. So regardless, I had my mac and cheese. I actually asked my dad, I'm like, well, I guess I don't need to pass the mac and cheese to you. He's like, I'll have a little bit. He did end up folding and having a little bit of bites. And it was really good mac and cheese. But overall, fantastic dinner. Thanks to my mother. My mother worked all day. Of course she did. To do Thanksgiving, and they've already declared we're eating out for Thanksgiving next year. we're just finding a different nice way of doing it. So, Jorge, how was your Thanksgiving?
Hey there, Phil. Pretty good. Pretty good. Well, I watched the Lions lose. It's just, you know, classic.
Yeah.
Classic. I didn't think the Cowboys were going to win, but they won.
How about them Cowboys? You know, we'll get into that. We'll get into that.
I made a ham for Thanksgiving on, that was Wednesday, though.
Friendsgiving was Wednesday?
Yeah, I made a ham, and it was pretty good.
Yeah?
Pretty good.
Are you selling yourself short, or you like, said pretty good? I'm like, I usually
make one, like, every Friendsgiving, because I made one once, and now I'm the guy that makes it all the time.
I think that's going to be me now, with the baked mac and cheese.
But, I mean, it's cool. I don't mind it. And, I went out of town.
Yeah,
so that was good. Get away from Fresno a little bit.
You pointed out something funny. Like, you're like, I don't want to be. You make the one thing good, the ham, and now you become the ham guy. And you're like, I have other things I could make,
right?
But now I have to make. It's like the, it's like a blessing and a curse, right? In terms of it, I think of, like, you want to be a master of none, right? Because then you can be versatile in your experiences in making food, but. Maybe if you like making the ham every year, that's what you like to do. But
I hosted once Friendsgiving, and I made the turkey. That was insane.
Yeah.
It took me an entire day to make that. It came out great. But the amount of time that I had to spend doing that, it was insane.
It's a labor of love.
I would never be doing that again.
Said never again.
Yeah, never again. I personally, like, the turkey is great and all that stuff, and I love that. But I don't envy. We have our own family tradition in Christmas time, which is we just get cracked crab, and that is a process. The crab, getting the crab meat all out there and everything like that. And I soon hope that we we get through the day without killing each other over it. Anyways, great Thanksgiving, like we said, a lot of fun. I'm sure had with family and friends, and going into the weekend, of course, it was great. Tavir, by the way, great stuff for Friday night. We went into that game, and
yes,
Jorge could only imagine what we were going through the audio portion of it. I don't know if you got curious and turned on the stream from the video side.
I did see when you guys were looking at it, but I have played in a game like that.
You were talking about it, yeah.
We played against Carruthers once, and around this time, it was the last game of the season, and I just, you know, the valley gets foggy, and it's crazy playing like that, but I never thought about, like, you know, you guys that
up are there.
Up there can't really see what's going on.
Like, imagine from the perspective of the players, it's not a big deal. It wasn't like they couldn't see anything from what their vantage point was. It was more of a matter of, like, us having a chance to be able to see what it was for the people. And the people in the stands, I'm sure, were dealing with the same stuff. There was only a couple times in the game where it really got, like, difficult. But other than that, it was a lot of fun. Highly memorable game for me. And I'm sure it will be for the Minarets people who ended up winning that one for the first time. And first title. Tavir, 2 days later, 3 days later, I'm sure you're still thinking about that game.
Yeah, for sure. I think, honestly, it was the right amount of just great atmosphere. You know, it was enough fog to where it was going to make it like a good experience, but not too much to the point where it affected the gameplay to like 100%.
Yeah.
But yeah, that will always be something that I remember.
Yeah. And it was funny enough, driving out of that stadium, literally 15 seconds later, nothing. It just like the fog wanted to sit on that football field. That was about it. I don't know how science works with the weather and fog and all that stuff. And you have a theory, Jorge?
Well, if it gets a little bit colder, so you know, there's got to be a certain amount of weather, like the coldness.
Yeah.
For other the what is it called
the dew point. Yeah.
You know, to get in the same level. And if it's a little bit colder, then there's no fog. If it's above that, then there's no fog. But there's that one point where it's just fog. Yeah. And it could be, you know, half a mile away, and then you hit it, and then like another half a mile, there's nothing.
It was strange. It was so strange. Well, it was 46 degrees, I think, was the temperature. But, you know, we were above like 1,000 feet of elevation plus. So it was, I always think it's like where the clouds are a little bit. You kind of get up there. We weren't like crazy up there, but, you know, props to Minarets. And the crowd was great and the people were great and they were hosting us. And
I heard the cowbells. That's what I heard the most.
You heard the cowbells. That's for sure. Those plays. And they're going to be going again because I think they're playing in state. We'll talk about who's playing in state a little bit later in this hour. So, outside of that, there was a lot of things Fresno State-wise that tailed end into the weekend. And, of course, I want to start with the football team who wrapped up their season on Saturday with a victory over San Jose State. Fresno State finishes 8-4 on the record. They take home the Valley Trophy for the final time in conference play. Of course, we know that this rivalry will be locked in moving forward as a non-conference game, a protected rivalry per se for at least the foreseeable future. So San Jose State will get a chance to rebuttal next year, I believe, at Fresno. But outside of that, fascinating game, fascinating, weird, strange, felt like a final week of the year kind of game where a lot of things were attempted in this football game. I wouldn't say we had the most prolific play on the offensive side, but it was enough to win over a team that has struggled to play consistent football. I believe this was the first time we scored 40 plus since the Southern game on this football side. So, and I think it's also a great indication in terms of how this defense has played as a group. This defense once again showing its teeth, as I would consider. This has been in the conversation for a while now of how great this defense has been this season. And once again, it's providing all the things it needed to provide in terms of it. How about five interceptions in this football game for Fresno State on that side of the ball? Five picks, which is, I believe, the most they've had in a season this year so far now. Up until, well, we got one more game after this, which is the bowl game. But it continues to prove that this defense has led this team throughout this season, is the one that keeps it going. And when the ball rolls downhill against teams like Fresno State, it certainly feels like there's nothing that could stop it in terms of it. Two picks for sure, Simeon Harris on Saturday. Ethan Tierney had a pick. Jaden Davis had a pick. Azillion Hamilton had a pick. Just all of the top secondary guys out there in terms of it. I'm sure Jakari Embry wanted to be in that conversation. I'm sure Cam Braca wanted to be in that conversation. I'm sure you know, all of those secondary guys wanted to have a say in getting those things, getting those interceptions. But what a turnout for the Fresno State defense on Saturday. And I think that's just indicative of what the season has been, which is the defense has led this team. And it's the reason they're at 8 wins. The offense did enough. Surely it didn't help the cause in a couple situations, but outside of it, it wasn't catastrophic mistakes that led to a loss. It is a nice 8-win season for Coach Ensign his first year.
Yeah, and I totally think that the missed field goal at the end of the or right after we got that Bryson Donaldson fumble really shifted this game into Fresno State's favor. And when you have a quarterback that throws for only 138 passing yards, your defense is doing something right if you score 40 points. So that was definitely a big performance by them. It's been big performances by them all season long. And, you know, if there's one lasting thing that I will remember from this season for Fresno State, it's going to be how good that defense played throughout the entire year.
Jorge, this is what we're going to think about with this team, right? The defense, the way this defense played, the way it forced turnovers. What is it officially? It's plus was a plus two on Saturday.
It got a turnover from every single one of their quarterbacks.
Yeah, corners. Yeah.
So
yeah.
No, every quarterback you turn it over.
Oh yeah.
So we got a.
Oh yeah, they threw three. No. Sorry, Robert McDaniel did not throw a pick. Let's give the respect
one for,
to
one for four. Let's give 8 yards.
Let's
zero
give
picks.
The respect to Robert McDaniel out there.
I thought he threw.
No, you had Xavier Ward throwing three. You had Tama Masone throwing two.
Not much better.
No. Well, yeah. Huh. Interesting. Yeah. I thought. Okay. Well, good for him.
I would bet you if you left Robert McDaniel in for a few more plays, he'd probably throw a pick as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Our secondary was on point that night, and obviously, I think you know, I love a rivalry like that. I love that we took it seriously, and it was a lot like other games, but this time the offense didn't just give up.
Yeah.
You know, you throw an interception, yeah, okay, well, go back and do work.
Yeah, the pick six wasn't great. But
it wasn't. It was a lot like, you know, the ones before in other games, but this time the mindset kept the same. Mindset didn't change. They didn't, you know, get low and started making other mistakes. And honestly, the run game was working.
Yeah.
And it helped EJ out, you know, create different opportunities. And I love how he threw that one touchdown to number five.
Josiah Freeman.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So it was good. It was a good game. A great game, actually, my head.
I just love the stat sheet of looking at where the drives start again. I love seeing that. I just kind of love seeing, you know, like, let's be honest. I could say the defense shut out this team if it weren't for a couple of really, like, catastrophic turnovers on the tail end of it. You know, obviously the pick six isn't going to reflect on what the defense did. That was on the pick six of EJ Warner there. So you have that. And the only other points for San Jose scored was on a fumble from EJ once again, it's very interesting. It bookends this way. It was very much like Kansas, remember, where he was on a player for quite some time and then the ball squirts out. I was like deja vu for me.
They should have, I mean, in my mind, my head, they should have been like, that's the, like,
yeah,
there's no more forward progress. Forward progress has ended. He's down.
It's just the nature of football, though, unfortunately, in that terms of it. I wanted to find out if this was right or not. Let me see if I can get this. Okay, no, he did have. I thought Danny Scudero was like was his worst game. He's had a couple of worst games in terms of it, but it was his worst game in terms of reception, tied for his lowest receptions. He had four against Nevada, he had four against Fresno State. Yardage wise, it wasn't too great either. So when you shut down, I think what maybe one of the top receivers out there in the Mountain West, that's a nice job.
Yeah, when you shut down probably the best receiver in terms of stats in the FBS to only 57 yards. Yeah, that defense is doing something right. I think this is interesting because this is like the one of the few years where I can think that the Fresno State defense was really this much of a game changer compared to the offense. I think that the defense really, I'm not going to say carried this year because the rushing game was absolutely amazing, but they did such a good job this season and really distanced themselves in terms of how much effect they had on games.
What about just the goal? You saw those hits laid down by those at the goal line from the defense too to prevent a couple of times. They eventually did score on a touchdown run, but it was not easy on this defense. There were a couple major hits at the goal line that I'm like, that's swagger. That's this defense. That's the way it's supposed to be, which is difficult to score on. And I really enjoyed the energy from the defense too. It's just, this is one of my most rootable defensive units in Fresno State in quite some time, if not like at least from my memory. I wanted to root for all of these guys out there in terms of it. I don't think there's a single player out there that is like ducking the responsibility of what they've been doing all year. I think these guys have owned what they've done this season. This defense deserves the praise it has been. There's not a single player I sit there and look at and I'm like, he didn't pull his weight. I think this Fresno State defense is obviously, from a statistical standpoint into what the eye test tells me, has been one of the best, if not the best, we've seen in, you know, the last 15, 20 years. And I think this is, unfortunately, the record doesn't indicate that I think a lot of people are going to remember it for. But if I go to my back, my personal little history book of what this Fresno State team has seen, this has got to be a top tier unit for me.
And this is going to be, you know, as you said, one of the best defenses that we've ever seen in terms of Fresno State. One can hope that this is the same level of defense that we get going into.
Well, they're losing a lot now. Right. That's the double-edged sword of it.
Exactly. And so losing all those players that will be seniors and graduating, going to the draft, that will definitely be something that hurts. But one can hope that you can have some sort of a, you know, season-to-season change, not change, but you know, you keep it the same in terms of that defense, and the philosophy will stay the same and the coaching will stay the same.
Well, that's the question now, is what indicates what the product of the unit is. Of is it from the coaching staff and what they've implemented it? Are there players out there that are draftable? Like, is this legit talent out there? And I think there's a mixture of both, but I'm not sitting here saying there's a drop dead like NFL guy potentially coming out of this side. Maybe the couple of the corner guys are going to get looks, but I'm sitting here looking as a proof of the pudding from the coaching staff, from Benedetto to Coach Entz, and the way he works in the defensive side. And we know that's Coach Entz's background, is defensive perspective. And so it goes to figure that Fresno State's strength is defense. But is it a matter of the product of what the coaching staff has put in place at this group? Or is it a matter of, is there actual caliber talent out there that could translate to the next level? That's to be seen. But I think it's a product of both. Of players buying into what they're doing versus what the talent is presented potentially at what we have in the next level side. Jorge, you were going to say something there.
No, I think the defense is ranked in the top 25 of the country. Mm-hmm. I think that they're, you know, they're definitely, I see a couple, at least a couple of guys that are going to go, if not drafted in the late rounds, at least undrafted, going to get a chance to go NFL.
Yeah.
Some of them might make a team. This is a good, talented, you know, well-coached defense. And we see it every game. Yes, they had their ups and downs. But I feel like, you know, if you continue this transition to next season and continue with the same mentality, I think those players will continue the type of defense that the coaches want.
I'll put Tanvir on the spot. Gun to your head. Who's the first player drafted, or what would be your highest rated prospect on this defense?
I don't know.
I can tell you right now.
Go ahead.
Hamilton. I see.
I would say Hamilton as well, but I feel like there's so many good players on this defense. I also think that drafting, you know, takes into consideration like what your size and what you're doing in terms of your
It's a little undersized. Opponents. I think a lot of guys are undersized on that defense they are.
That's where I find it difficult to see who's going to get drafted. But if you're talking just pure skill, I think Elzilian Hamilton has it all.
Yeah. That's an interesting discussion to see where that goes, especially when draft talks start getting around. But we got another game, I'm sure, for the Bulldogs to come up with this thing. But we'll take a bigger picture at this group, I think, later in the week here. I just wanted to get the initial reaction. Hey, Valley Trophy staying home. We like that. And can't wait to see what this team, where they'll play. We'll know in six-ish days of what bowl game they're going to be playing, so we can't wait for that. And
probably the Arizona Bowl.
We've been indicating that, I would say. Might start playing Snoop Dogg on this show a little more often. Snoop. So.
There we go.
All right, let's take a break. We'll come back with more sports talk here. Just getting started here on Behind the Bench on 1430 ESPN.
Carry on my wayward son. There'll be peace when you are done. Lay your weary head to rest. Don't you cry no more.
All right, welcome back to Behind the Bench here on 1430 ESPN Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader. Already over halfway done with this hour. Wow. Time goes by. So another big Fresno State event last over the weekend. Bulldogs making their return to Celent Arena. And it was all fun and games until the Roadrunners got hot down the stretch, beating Fresno State last night by a tune of 76-71. Fascinating game. I don't know if you guys got a chance to watch. I was there in the house. I know it was – I think it was on locally in some form or fashion channel-wise. Did you guys get a chance to check out
Fresno State? It was from the Channel 24 on NBC 47 or NBC 24.
Yeah, KC.
CBS 27 app. TV app.
Yeah.
So if you have it on your TV, you can watch it on
your TV. Central Valley. The folks, our friends over there with Scott Bemis and Angelique and all them. Yeah. Did you get a chance to watch it?
I saw the beginning of it, and then I had other things to do.
Other applications. Did you get a chance to watch the game, Tim Veer, or shaking your head? No. Interesting game. Bulldogs come out, and there's some big time swings of momentum, a lot of great defense when it came to Fresno State in terms of turning things around. My goodness, DJ Stickman was awesome on the defensive end. You know, Zach Collins making some big time plays. And then with about 10 minutes to go, I would say, in the second half, DJ Stickman got hurt. He had a little hip stinger when he tried to lay up on the near end. I was right there, and he started kind of grabbing by his side. They pulled him out, tried to put him back in with about 3 minutes to go. He was just not right. He turned the ball over at midcourt, ended up that basket breaking the tie, at making it a 66-64 Bakersfield leading.
And they were up by halftime. I saw that.
They were certainly up. They were up by like they were up
a lot,
six,
but it was
40-34, and then. As soon as Stickman goes down, you have the top scorer for Bakersfield go crazy, who was probably his assignment, Dallin Smith, who he went 9-for-21 of the field goal percentage from the field, 30 points, but how about 12-for-13 from the free throws as well. The fouling at the basket, Dallin Smith was insane as soon as Stickman was out of the game. But it's a matter of whether it was the stagnation from both sides on the offensive side or the defensive side, the Bulldogs finding ways to just kind of get in these lulls, which was something they weren't being plagued by not 4 days earlier. If you do recall, last time we were on, we were previewing that Pepperdine game. They go out and drop 40 on Pepperdine in the second half and outscore them by like 30 in a crazy run. Unfortunately, the cap was there. You lose to a team that shoots 1-for-15 from the 3-point range. That's not a great stat to lose to when Bakersfield was that bad from the outside. Bakersfield was also just insane from the free throw line. You see the stat. I don't know if you saw it. 23-for-24 last night in that game. Coach Vance had a chance to talk after the game with us in a media scrum. Here's what he had to say. Initially asking about just kind of the things that went wrong offensively down the stretch.
I think the biggest thing, you know, just our movement was not as good as it has been lately. You know, I felt like we cut a lot better the last couple games. This game, a little bit of bumping and so forth kind of took us out, but still, we just didn't do the job.
Was there anything Bakersfield was doing?
Not really. I mean, we're a better 8-for-33 shooting team from the three. And all you got to do is hit a couple of those, and it's a whole different game, you know. Cam Foss is a very good shooter. For him to go 1-for-8, I don't know what Jake was, but we're better than that. It's great that we're here at Salon. I just wish – I'm just disappointed for the fans. You know, we've been playing pretty darn good basketball, and today we kind of laid an egg. It was kind of disappointing.
You turn the page. You got a long period here before you go on a plane to Arkansas. What's the message now moving forward?
We just got to get better every day. That's, you know, that's the whole job. That's a part of preseason. You want to get better every day. You know, we got things we're going to clean up this week, and we're going to put a little zone in this week. And we'll have some stuff ready for that.
Well, there's Vance after that. He did mention something about the zone defense. They didn't really have a zone set defensively that kind of broke things up for Bakersfield a little bit, especially when they were cutting inside. Maybe a zone gets a little bit better there. He didn't really have a zone defensive set to go to for the guys, so he's going to implement that this week. But 2-for-8 was Jake Heibretter, by the way, when you're looking at the stat there. So outside shooting – didn't quite get it done in terms of it for the Bulldogs. Just too many mistakes down the stretch for Fresno State. And it's unfortunate because they were close to getting a win that would have put them over the win total from last year before the month of December, which would have been just an incredible story to think about just in that perspective. But now 6-3 against the newly AP-ranked 25th Arkansas Razorbacks on Saturday. Things will get tougher for this Bulldog team as they move forward. But from what Vance said, I think there's obviously some clear things out there for this Bulldog squad to figure out. And they got a week to do so. And it'll be iron sharpens iron when they head to the home of Calipari right now. You know, Stanvier, when you read these stats, you hear about all the things talked about with this game. You know, it's just a matter. It's still a young team, very, very young, fresh team. And it's one that's still trying to figure itself out here at 6-3.
Yeah. Again, as you said, this team is going to not necessarily live and die by the three, but that's generally going to be what their offense is to win games. And when two of your best shooters go 3-for-16 from three, especially Heidebreder, who has been playing very good over the last couple of games, it's just not going to be a recipe for success. I think in terms of what you can learn from this Arkansas game and how you can move forward from this, I think definitely that defense that Vance Wahlberg was talking about, that's definitely something that you're going to have to look forward to. But also, I think the rebounding is going to be something to look at, because this Arkansas team is very tall at all positions, and you can definitely learn what you have in the interior defense with these rebounding numbers.
I look at the play of Wilson Jocks. He's the one 7-footer for Fresno State, and while I like the presence of what he provides, sometimes he gets a little lost in the offensive sets and throws some balls away that shouldn't be thrown away. In the last 16 seconds, Fresno State had the ball with down three, and they went to a three-pointer from Cameron Foss. Foss missed it. Jocks rebounded underneath, and instead of just going up with about 8 seconds to go, he tried to look for an outlet. And I think that's one you kind of wish he just put back, make it a 1-point game, and try to play the foul game again in terms of it. So there's a little bit of a basketball IQ situation going on with the big man inside. I don't mean to pick on him, but I think he was a little bit of a liability in the game last night. And unfortunately for Fresno State, it's really the option they have to go to for Wilson Jocks, because 6'11 Makan Duff is just not playing basketball right now. Like, he is just not doing. He was a starter at the beginning of this year, and now he is not even cracking a rotation here. He's not even in the game, and he's supposed to be one of the top guys. He's 6'11", athletic guy from Senegal, and he is just not in the rotation right now. He's played himself out of it, and I think that's probably killing Vance in what he has in terms of options. He's got to lean on a 7-footer for those rebounding opportunities.
And it's always, especially when you get into conference play, those are the things that make a difference. I mean, talking about your point in the latest seconds, I'm just looking here. I mean, 3-point lead with 10 seconds left. You can give some leeway in terms of that because you're trying to tie the game.
And I get it.
I get it. But that's just in terms like how you have to be smart in a game. And the only way that you're going to create movement in terms of how good you are at going season by season is by putting yourself in these type of situations and understanding what you have to do and making smarter decisions. So, yes, I do totally agree that the interior is going to have to improve for Fresno State to get a lot more wins down the line.
Yeah, they'll need to get it going in terms of that. And we'll hope that DJ Stickman's all right injury-wise, because I think – he matters obviously a lot in terms of the defensive stopping ability from a guard position. His athleticism is just something you don't really see a whole lot.
Yeah, I mean, 18 minutes off the bench, like those are key.
He could have been 20. He could have been like 23 minutes off the bench if he didn't get that stinger in the hip. Although I heard some conversation that the middle emblem of the arena was a little slippery, and one of the plays that caused DJ to go down was that. Was at that logo. So I'm not trying to point fingers, but
just like the NBA championship trophy.
It was pointed out on the broadcast. It was pointed out everywhere in terms of that. Also, just not great when your starting lineup all minus in the plus minus and your bench is all plus in the plus minus. That's just something something you don't want to have as far as the recipe is concerned for this Bulldogs side. They're gonna have to continue to. I also argue. I'm like, I don't know if this is almost House of Cards, like with the roster. It's a roster that I would feel like if you lose any part of it, it starts to fall apart a little bit in terms of it. If we got all the pieces together with Fresno State, then I think there's some legit chances to win some basketball games in terms of it. Like UNLV is particularly not off to the hottest start right now. Boise, you know. Hawaii Pacific game aside, you know,
we will keep talking about that.
I will continue to look at that one and be like, well, anybody can beat them on a certain night.
Yeah, totally. I mean, also, I think if you just look at the starters, like Heidebreder, 20 points, Zayon Collins, 17 points, these guys are making great contributions. And certainly, I think
Collins had a great night.
Yeah, exactly. 6-for-13, you know, 3-for-6 from three range. And I think those guys, it's imperative that they stay healthy, as you said.
He was active on the defensive side. A lot of big steals that went the other way. Really good job with that. I kind of wish he finished a little more inside on the contact side of things. I know it's hard. I know it's hard to do that as a guard. It's tough, but outside of that, it's just that's a tough one to swallow.
Can I leave with one positive, though?
Go ahead.
I was saying that Fresno State needed to work on their free throws a lot, and they shot near 80%. From free throw range.
15-for-19.
Can still bring it up a little bit, but at least a slight improvement has been made in terms of that.
I'll amend that, and I'll say at the free throws that are really important, because there was a couple misses in the final bit that was like pretty brutal to take. But outside of that, yes, in the whole totality, 15-for-19, very good. Yeah, 8-for-33, ain't it? From 3-point range.
That is horrible.
That ain't it. That ain't it. Especially when you lose to a team that shoots 1-for-15. Like, make that math problem to me just doesn't compute. You face a team that shoots 1-for-15 and you lose. Yeah, that ain't ideal in terms of that. All right, let's take a break. Let's wrap up this hour next. Stay with us. Behind the Bench rolls along on 1430 ESPN.
Ladies up in here tonight. No fighting.
We got the refugees.
No fighting.
Over here.
No fighting.
All right, welcome back to Behind the Bench here on 1430 ESPN Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader. A little reminder of what's coming up tonight on the air. Patriots and Giants, 5 p.m. will be on Monday Night Football. Of course, that'll be the Westwood presentation. Of course, over on 790, Sharks hockey. Getting back into the win column, they hope, after a loss to Vegas on Saturday. Tough one. Tough loss. 4-3. They're playing the Utah Mammoth tonight in the Shark Tank. Should be a good one. Continue to roll along. This Sharks team, hey, they're in the hunt. They are in the hunt, as they say. That's at 6:30 pregame, 7 p.m. puck drop from San Jose. All right, high school football. And you know what? I'm going to shout out Paul Metters here, who is just doing the Lord's work here. Because as soon as this segment came up, he tweeted out 12 minutes ago all of the matchups that are relevant to the Central section. I got them right here for you. Because Timber, I don't believe he had these. We had these matchups. We had these matchups yesterday. I think we found out yesterday.
Yeah.
So here it is, courtesy of Paul Metters in a nice succinct tweet thread. If you want to give him a little like out there. So Division 1A, which is I would say there's the open, and then there's the 1AA, and then this is the 1A. Central will make it there. They have Pittsburgh on Saturday, December 6th at 6 p.m. So I remember those Pittsburgh Pirates fondly from my playing days and from my days at Heritage High School. They are a team that was in my league.
Is that the East Bay Pittsburgh?
That's the East Bay Pittsburgh Pirates. Courtesy, you know, your friendly Najee Harris's out there. I can remember. I'm trying to remember if Joe Mixon was a Pittsburgh Pirate. I think Joe Mixon might have been a Deer Valley Wolverine. I cannot remember. Or maybe he was a Freedom Falcon.
Freedom.
Yeah. Joe Mixon was a Freedom Falcon?
Yep.
Yeah, out of Oakley. Yeah. Oakley was like right next door to Brentwood. So, yeah, a couple of Bay Area. I know the East Bay well, man. I'll tell you what. Those teams are tough. I know about De La Salle. They got a Santa Margarita. Was that right? Santa Margarita on a couple weeks from now in the open division.
Yeah, Pittsburgh's two losses have been both against like top 15 teams in California.
Didn't they play De La Salle tough? I'm pretty sure
they did, and they only lost by a touchdown.
Yeah, Pittsburgh's ridiculous. Pittsburgh ridiculous though. You got Bakersfield Christian, the D2 AA playoffs. They host La Habra in the South Division, so that's at Bakersfield Christian, undefeated Eagles. They go Friday, December 5th, 7:30 p.m. See if they can continue their undefeated streak. Arroyo Grande gets a home game. And D3, Division AA, they get Ventura out of the South. So Arroyo Grande, a 10-4 record, finding a home game here. So that's fascinating to think about in terms of that. Lower divisions, you've got Kennedy out of Delano playing in the South Division, 11-3. They're at Carson on Saturday, December 6th at 6 p.m. They play at that time, Division 3, Single A. Division 4, Double A, which, reminder, Double A is higher than Single A. Emmanuel, undefeated Emmanuel, is going to Barstow on Friday, this Friday at 7:30 p.m. So we'll see what that one plays out like. Division 5A, it is Bishop Union and Southgate. Bishop Union at Southgate. Bishop Union beating Woodlake in the Central Section Playoff Championship at Saturday at 6 p.m. You got the 6A Single A Division game as Minarets gets another home game. Tammy, are we driving up?
Yes, we are.
No, 6 p.m.
We'll see.
They've got Winters. I do not know. I do not recall where Winters High School is. Let me see if I can Google this right here on the fly. It is in Winters, California, which is Winters Joint Union High School, which, if I can zoom out enough, appears to be just west of Sacramento. So not as crazy north as I thought it would be. It's NorCal, but it's...
Yeah, with a name like Winters, you got to be north.
You would think it'd be like Eureka or like Chico or anything like that, but that's what you got there. And so there we go. Fascinating developments there. And, you know, what do you make? Central East, you know, struggles against Grant earlier this year. They're playing better ball. They clearly are stronger as the season goes along. And they get this Pittsburgh team. What are your initial odds based off of what you've seen? Do you think the Bengals have – is their offense able to beat a lot of teams if they just get going in a certain direction? Like, disregard the rankings, the stats, just in the scheme and the ability. Like, it feels like Central can have all the answers on offense in terms of it. I guess it's a matter of what the other side will look like on that flip side.
Yeah, besides De La Salle, this Pittsburgh team has scored 42-plus points in basically – like the last six games that they played. And so I think this will be a game where Central East is probably going to be challenged a little bit more in terms of having a close game throughout the entirety of a game. I think that Central East has done a very good job in pulling away from games in the second half, even if the games are really close in the first half, but you might not be afforded that sort of privilege in terms of this type of game. So I think if Central East's offense can get to a hot start, they can certainly win this game, but I think this will be a lot closer than a lot of the games that they played over the last couple of weeks.
Looks like Pittsburgh spreads it out a lot offensively. They don't look like they run it a whole lot in terms of it. It seems like more of a spread pass attack, which, I mean, it's not like your traditional offense like they had with Clovis and what they had to deal with in terms of it. The run game setting up the pass. They do run the ball, but it's not at a clip that's like crazy to me. So it's just a matter of where your second and third kind of defenders are going to, how they're going to handle some of the guys who are capable. They got this RJ Mosley guy who's got 12 touchdown catches on the year, almost averaging 100 yards reception. But beneath that, you got another guy, Kenneth Ward, out there. What a name. King Wade. Have you seen this guy's name? Out there. Six touchdown grabs as well. It's fascinating, too, because I think Pittsburgh's had a couple of quarterbacks be playing on their roster as well.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to be that far ahead in games, you're probably going to put your backup in multiple times.
Yeah, certainly. So it's going to be interesting. And they beat up my Patriots 55-7 earlier this year. So go figure. Go figure. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to do who's been Audi, who's been nice of the weekend, talk about all the other stuff around the NFL and college. Stay with us. Hour two coming up next on 1430 ESPN.
He's got the knowledge.
Because once again, I have to come on air and talk about how right I am once again. In anything that it comes to sports.
He's got the questions.
I'm going to lose it. Are you kidding me? What are we doing here?
He's got the guests.
20th head coach in Fresno State history here, man. Is it hard to believe sometimes still the 20th head coach here in program history?
It's all moved really quickly here over the course of the last 5-6 weeks. But super excited to be here.
Phil Benatti is the voice for the Central Valley sports leader. Behind the Bench starts now. Brought to you by Helena Agri.
That's right, Behind the Bench here on 1430 ESPN, Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader. 1 hour left in the show before we send it off to New England, to Foxborough, Mass. For the Patriots and the Giants, Monday Night Football. I haven't heard that phrase in a couple of years, Monday Night Football and the Patriots. It's nice to be back. Nice to be back after a long wait. In terms of that, but you're watching the stream. Of course, you know why I'm a little excited today. Patriots are wearing their red unis, I believe, tonight. And as you know, I'm a Patriots fan, and I hope they get to 11 wins. First team to 11 wins this year would be nice in terms of that. Always hate the Giants in terms of what they've done to my childhood.
That will be your perpetual, like, hate.
Just, it's your Chiefs.
Yeah, nothing. Yeah, it's basically my Chiefs. But nothing will change the reason why I hate them.
Nothing will change the reason why I hate the Giants.
Yep.
Just I could like Jackson Dart. I could like Cam Scadabo. But the concept of them doing well for the Giants, it's just not – it's foreign to me. I cannot root for that. I'm sorry.
I get it.
Yeah. Anyways, moving on. Let's recap the NFL weekend. We haven't done that yet. And, of course, some big results from the season and from the week. A lot of things to go over, and we're digging all the way back to Thanksgiving for these takes as well, because we haven't had a chance to talk about it. So let's do that right now. With the who's been Audi, who's been nice, and Tanvir, you get to decide which side we want to go to. Do we want to go nice today, or do we want to go naughty today? Where do we want to start?
I'm always a proponent for having the hate. All right. Go through the veins first. So.
Let me roast. Let's get ready to roast some people here. Let's go with the Benatti list first. Let's start on the Benatti side first, and we're going to go to Philadelphia, the Eagles. I'm going to start with them. I think this is the clear and obvious choice to roast in terms of it. And I'm going to go specifically to an aspect of football that boggles my mind in terms of, yes, the Eagles played horribly on both sides of the ball, allowing the run game to exist for the Bears as much as it did. But no human being on earth can explain to me, when you're down 15, scoring the touchdown, you decide to go for two the first time instead of going for two the second time. There is no apt explanation for why you do it, and yet teams do it. And I'm killing the Eagles for it because, of course, they went down 9 because they didn't get the two-point conversion, because clearly your team was already inept at what it was doing offensively anyway, and you simply think you can find your two-point play that will work suddenly in that moment. I know you got to play it at some point anyway, but at least that really give me the best chance to get into the football game as opposed to just giving it away with 4 minutes to go and me not caring about the rest of it. And yeah, Jake Elliott wasn't perfect on the field goal extra point attempt in the last half, and maybe that was part of your deciding factor, but let's be honest with yourself. Extend the game the best way you can. No human has an ability to explain to me why going for two down 9 makes sense in any comprehensible side of the word.
Well, the analytics would say,
get out of here.
The analytics would say it doesn't matter. I agree with you, though. I personally think that going for two on the second touchdown, if possible, is what you should do, just because it allows your team to get ready for that type of situation.
Because guess what you're doing? You have momentum into that second touchdown in the moment. There's a on-your-heels nature of the defense. Like, we gave up the first one. Oh, shoot, we gave up the second one. We really got to be here in the second, this two-point conversion. When it comes to the first time, there's not enough momentum to me that swings the game where there's the intangible side of it where the defense can be susceptible to making mistakes. You get a penalty because they know it's do or die in that situation. You saw what happened with Washington and Denver. When it's at that point where you're going for two, then I understand going for it at that moment. But in that situation, the Eagles had next to no momentum getting into that football game, and it made no sense to go for two there.
Yeah, and I think that what I want to highlight in terms of the Eagles is I feel like a lot of Eagles fans have put the blame on Kevin Petullo, the offensive coordinator of the Philadelphia Eagles, and not being able to call a game in a good manner. And what I will say is, yes, I do believe that Kevin Petullo has something to do with the ineptness, if that's even a word, of the Philadelphia Eagles offense. But I also want to say Jalen Hurts and this passing offense, they just have not been able to execute at the level that they were able to do last year. I feel like there was a couple of plays in that game. One, what I want to highlight is the Devontae Smith cross route that he had wide open for possible touchdown. And maybe it's hurting me more because Devontae Smith was on my fantasy team.
Yeah, a little bit.
But the fact that you can't hit a guy in stride like that when he's open is an issue in terms of the execution. And I think both parties are to blame for that.
Yeah. Boy, the Eagles are squandering this a little bit.
It feels very 2023 to me.
Yeah, and that started a little later in the season, let's be honest. I think that was at Thanksgiving time last year or 2 years ago, and they barely made the playoffs in terms of that. So it's going to be fascinating to see where we'll go from there. Let's go to my next Ben Ice here, and let's go with that. And let's go to the Bills, the Buffalo Bills, which is a team that reeled off 23 unanswered points to beat the Pittsburgh Steelers. And congratulations, Josh Allen, for getting the most rushing touchdowns in a career at quarterback. We thought Cam Newton was a freak specimen athlete quarterback in any sense of the word. And now Josh Allen is that guy as well. And not only that, how about 249 on the ground? We knew the Steelers' defense was susceptible to giving up the run, but 249 is ridiculous when it comes to it. And so I think Buffalo did what it needed to do in getting back into the swing of their season a little bit. They're finding a couple of ways to win now. And I know they got a couple of tough more games left, including against the New England Patriots. They got the Eagles still left in terms of it, but that was a nice solid win going away. I know Aaron Rodgers was injured midway through this game as well, but I think Buffalo was going to win it regardless of the way that situation was played out. And so I'm giving the props to Allen, Buffalo. I don't say they're back, but I would say that was a good game to get.
Yeah, before I go to the flip side of this entire game, I do want to give props. I think being down your top two tackles, Spencer Brown on the right side, Deion Dawkins on the left side, and still being able to run the football as effectively as they did against guys like, you know, they got Nick Herbig on that line, Cameron Hayward, TJ Watt, and you were still able to run for as many yards as they did. I think they got to 250 plus, if I'm not mistaken, was exceptional. And so from that aspect, yes, I think the Bills should deserve this. But in terms of this specific game, I would honestly say that this was more about the Steelers being as bad as they were opposed to the Bills being as good as they were. I think that there is a real situation happening in Pittsburgh in terms of how much they've invested into that defense and not being able to perform at the level they are. They're the second oldest team in the NFL. Aaron Rodgers is on his last legs, and you don't have the long-term prospects on the offensive side of the ball like you had in a George Pickens to continue over the next couple of years. So I think this is a very bleak time to be a Steelers fan. I will talk about that with Daniel tomorrow.
Yeah, I want to know what his thoughts are.
Yeah, it's very bleak, and this is more of a Benatti for the Steelers, in my opinion, than a Benice for the Bills.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. My other Benatti is reserved for a different quarterback and any group out there, and we'll go to him right now.
I'd love to hear it.
Lamar Jackson and the Baltimore Ravens, just with an absolute no-show on Thanksgiving night in terms of it. And there's not much to say outside of the turnover aspect of what happened there. this is a team that might back its way into a playoff spot regardless of what happens with Pittsburgh. As much as bad as where Pittsburgh at is a certain situation, the Ravens with five giveaways, Lamar Jackson not looking like he knows how to play quarterback in any sense of the term, just looking like a shell of himself out there, to a Bengals team that isn't supposed to be a team that is going to make your offense struggle. That's not what you do against the Cincinnati Bengals defense. And yet here you are, giving away the ball five times and only putting up, I mean, in certain like meaningful time of football, 12 points. I don't know what was the final score. What was it ended up? I don't even
32-14.
Okay, 14 points. Whatever. Regardless outside of it. I think by far that might be the least amount of points the Bengals have given up this year. It feels like it. I'm just going to say it now. In terms of it, 14 points, not bad.
You're right.
Yeah.
That's how bad they've been.
Yeah. Lamar Jackson specifically just was horrendous on Thanksgiving night. And I don't know if he's right. I don't know if he's healthy. I don't know if they should be going to him right now because of what it looks like. And everyone who just assumes the Ravens are going to come back and win this division, I don't know if that's an aside. I sit here and look at the Bengals schedule and say, well, maybe. Maybe there's a run there. I don't know. But it seems like nobody wants to win this division, and the Ravens feel like the least interested team in doing so.
Yeah, I also want to bring up this stat for as amazing of a quarterback as Lamar Jackson is. He's only thrown for one pass TD in the last four games, and he has not rushed for a touchdown since, I think, nine games ago. So this guy is on a historic touchdown drought. He hasn't scored a single touchdown the last three games on the ground or through the air. And we are seeing an offense that is so inept. I thought coming into this year, if there was going to be one side of the ball that the Ravens did not have clicking on all cylinders going into a possible Super Bowl run, it would be the defense. And the defense has started to improve slowly, but it seems like the offense is going in the opposite direction. And I think Lamar Jackson is certainly a reason for that. He needs to get back to the form that he was in last year if they want any semblance of a Super Bowl run. He's going to have to be the game changer for them. And I can understand from a weapons perspective, it may not be the greatest weapons in the world when you have Zay Flowers as your receiver one and aging DeAndre Hopkins and also Rashad Bateman along with Mark Andrews. But I think he needs to get it done. He's shown that he can get it done in the past. And I think that this is a very weird stretch that we've seen out of Lamar Jackson.
Is a Bengals run remotely crazy, or am I?
They're two games behind, and I think they play the Ravens again
The only weird thing is that Pittsburgh and Baltimore have to play each other twice. And so they have to split it for the Bengals to get there. The Bengals need it. Like, let's be like, so both of them, if you split that series, they have to be at 7 wins. They're going to both be at 7 wins if you split the series. That means Bengals need to get to, like, what, they're 4-8 now?
Yep.
So 9-8?
If they win out, they go 9-8. And am I going to expect the Ravens or the Steelers to win 3 out of their next, what, 6 games?
2 out of their next 6.
Yeah, it's going to be tough.
One of them to win it. I mean, the Ravens were supposedly having the easiest schedule in terms of it. Here's what Ravens have. They have Pittsburgh next week. They have the Bengals. They have they beat the Jets. That's right. So they have Pittsburgh. They have the Bengals again. The Bengals could beat them and have the head-to-head. You have the Patriots. No easy there. I don't expect them to move the ball against Green Bay, you know, and then they got Pittsburgh again in terms of it. Those two teams could easily split it with each other. And then on the flip side, tell me if you find 2 wins here for the Pittsburgh Steelers, including the Ravens. Can they find a win with the Dolphins, the Lions, and the Browns in Cleveland?
The Dolphins have been playing really well. I feel like that's a bad matchup
for
the Steelers, as weird as that sounds. The Lions, again.
In Detroit.
Yeah. I don't know, that's tough.
And that Cleveland's never given.
Cleveland, I think, is the win there. But, again, I don't know, because this Pittsburgh team is looking really bad right now.
And I'm looking at the Bengals schedule, who is 4-8. Can they get to 9-8 with this schedule? So, Burrow at Buffalo.
Yeah, that's going to be a tough game, but I also think with Burrow back, they can certainly win that game.
And then they got the Ravens, and then they've got at Miami.
Yep.
Home Arizona. And then closing it with the Browns and Cincy.
They're winnable games. They're certainly winnable games. I could see a path that the Cincinnati Bengals make the playoffs.
The Bengals back. Boy, that'd be crazy. All right. My next Benice. That's where we're at. How about them Cowboys? How about them Cowboys on Thanksgiving? We hit on the number one game of the week. I think it still was, like, my favorite game of the week to watch. I know, like, Washington, Denver was fine. It was great. It was good, compelling football. But to me, cinema. It was just cinema between Kansas City and Dallas with the stakes that were there. You felt the playoff atmosphere. You felt everything hinge on every sort of play down the stretch. Both quarterbacks operating, I would say, at a very high level in terms of its capabilities. The Cowboys defense finding pressure when it needed to most. This defense is starting to show some teeth here a little bit more than I think people are giving them credit for. And it's going to be interesting to see the matchup against Detroit on Thursday. But I said this. It just feels like a different Dak season than most in terms of it. I've been very much a Dak, I don't know if I'm calling it apologist, but I've never been the hater of Dak as most people I feel like have. And he really put the Cowboys on his back in terms of those drives. George Pickens, a phenomenal addition to this offense with a couple of major grabs there. CeeDee Lamb with the big time grabs as well. Dallas saving its season, and now with the Eagles collapsing here, I could be convinced there is a division title in the Cowboys' future here, potentially, if they get past this Lions team. I'm sitting there looking at the schedule, and I'm sitting there thinking maybe Dallas is hosting a playoff game in the NFC.
Yeah, Lions and Cowboys is going to be a massive game on Thursday, and that's really going to decide which way I think about this team. George Pickens, I think, has been an absolute home run of a pickup for the Dallas Cowboys. Quinnen Williams has changed that defensive line. Now you have Quinnen Williams and Kenny Clark in the middle of that defensive line, and they're playing really good football right now. And Dak Prescott, as you said, playing at an MVP caliber level. Both Patrick Mahomes and Dak Prescott are leading the league in QBR, leading the league in passing yards, and they're both top 4 in passing touchdowns this season. And so I think that with Dak Prescott playing as good as he is right now, they can certainly win the division with the Eagles playing down at a level as they have been over the last couple of weeks.
Was that the best Dak you've seen all year? I know he threw the pick at the beginning of the year,
yeah.
But outside of that, like, every time he dropped back, I felt like there was a play made.
Yeah, and I think I'm not trying to take Dak, like, I'm not trying to take the moment away from Dak, but I also think George Pickens has revolutionized this offense and been able to transform the passing game because it allows CeeDee Lamb to be one-on-one coverage. It allows George Pickens to be a one-on-one coverage, and you're talking about two of the best guys in terms of one-on-one coverage receivers.
I want to go to another Benice because I want to end on this Benatti here.
Sounds good.
We're going to go back-to-back Benices. And I'm going to let you, because I think you and I share the same sentiment here. Brock Purdy, Niners quarterback who, you know, and swag in more ways than one on Cleveland on a Sunday afternoon. Sixth career game with a rushing touchdown, passing TD. That was a sweet rushing touchdown, by the way, not going to lie. First time since last year against the Lions. You know, no picks. We like that. And the 49ers, just the, you know, very efficient offensive day against a defense that, you know, had everything you could work against them in terms of it to get to 26 points. Let's be honest, Cleveland really tried to give that game away, I would say, more ways than one. But let's give Brock Purdy a shine, and I'm sure you've got some statements to say about the way Brock Purdy played.
Yeah, white boy got a little bit of motion. That's what George Kittle said, and I think that's certainly correct. I'm going to say I am proud that Brock Purdy came back after that, let's just be honest, terrible performance against the Carolina Panthers, especially in that first half. And I'm not going to sit here and act like he had the gaudy passing numbers. He only threw for 168 yards, but playing against a pretty good Cleveland Browns defense, this Cleveland Browns defense is still top three in EPA per play on the defensive side of the ball. I think that he looked pretty good out there, and I think he needed this type of performance to really give himself confidence going into the latter parts of the season. So, I'm not going to say an elite performance by Brock Purdy, but I am certainly happy, and I think this was a very good performance against a pretty good Cleveland Browns defense.
Yeah, certainly. And it's good to get the bye week.
Oh, amazing to get the bye week for more reasons than one.
All right, my last Benatti. I'm changing it at the last minute. It's not on the paper. Ooh, I'm changing it. It's going to the CFB on Fox. Twitter graphic people. Did you see my tweet? I showed it to
you.
Yes, I did. And there were numerous mistakes on the standings graphic that they put up on the Fresno State game. Tanvir, I would argue there are, you know, I think there's four mistakes up there in terms of it. Two of them being the New Mexico
logo.
Logo being New Mexico State. They called them New Mexico State when it's New Mexico. San Diego State had a 9.3 record instead of a 9-3 record with a dash. And finally, Utah State apparently just donned the logo from the Utes, which I would imagine both universities are not happy about, would be happy about. This is, I mean, by the standard, you can get one mistake on these graphics. I've never seen a graphic more chaotic and horrible than the one we saw on Saturday.
Yeah, I you know, as a, I do a little bit of graphic design, and I can give some leeway to like one mistake, but I think four mistakes, yeah, you gotta fire the guy.
Yeah,
at this point.
But unfortunately, I'm pretty sure it's like a college intern.
I will show the screen.
Yeah, like a screenshot. I tweeted it. It's on my Twitter account. If you go at Phil Benatti, on there, it's it is a sight to behold. It just gets worse and worse as you just keep looking at it. And Mountain West Twitter got a hold of it over the weekend. It was fun. It was quite fun to dissect in terms of it. They updated it. Did you see the tweet under it? They tried to update it. Thought they fixed it. Forgot one thing, Tanvir. Utah State logo still was wrong.
Still has the Utah logo.
Brutal. Brutal. All right, let's take a break. That was the Who's Been Audi, Who's Been Ice of the weekend. Let's take a break. Let's talk college football next year on 1430 ESPN. All right, welcome back to Behind the Bench here on 1430 ESPN Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader here on this Monday. Getting closer to Monday Night Football between the Giants and the Patriots. But, of course, there's been some news dominating the sports window here, and feel free to acknowledge it here now because it is I don't know if it's at the expense of a former Fresno State coach, but of course, as anybody knows, Lane Kiffin, of course, had his origins here at Fresno State, and it'd be remiss to not at least discuss the situation here for just a little bit. I don't have like the crazy outrage, and I'm sure a lot of people do, outside of just in terms of the system itself. I have been a critic of the NCAA for quite some time now, and people know that. And to my belief is it is a product of the environment you create in terms of what makes people go crazy about these certain situations. Is no, to me, there is no fault to what Lane Kiffin is doing, because Lane Kiffin has the right as an American, as a free person in this country, to go pursue what he wants to pursue. Is it unpalatable for some people who probably root for that university and at Ole Miss, and some people are not going to accept any sort of excuse when it comes to that? Sure. But he has every right to pursue a better opportunity, which LSU provided. Now, what LSU did, if you're going to go to that perspective of them poaching Lane Kiffin for whatever X amount of money they threw at him in terms of it, that's a different discussion in terms of it. But LSU's prerogative to do that only was a product of what the NCAA has created, which is a hands-off, freewheeling dystopia of college football right now, and really, frankly, college athletics, that allows universities to feel like they can do this on a regular basis. And so if you have anybody to blame, it is once again the pencil pushers up there at the NCAA that doesn't want to do anything about, except care about the bottom dollar of their wallet. And as long as it's news in the news cycle, they are okay with it. Good news or bad, if you are in the news, it's fine. And apparently that's what the rule is for the NCAA. And so that's where I stand in this standpoint. I don't have any problem with Lane Kiffin pursuing a new job and a new opportunity at a university that, frankly, as everybody will know, LSU is a much bigger name brand to me, at least for me, here in Fresno, California. I knew about LSU more than I knew what Ole Miss was before I became more of an avid sports fan in terms of it. So to me, that is where I sit on this situation. People can feel differently, and but I want to make the greater point here is that the NCAA has created the pigsty that we are currently sitting in terms of college football and its movement of its coaches and players right now. And clearly something has to be done, and nobody has the balls to do it.
Yeah, and I will say, in terms of this situation, like, I grew up in the Southeast. I grew up in Arkansas, and so I know about how crazy those fans are for SEC football, and I can understand that's basically their life. That with a region that doesn't necessarily
it's
have
their pro sports,
exactly, with a region that doesn't necessarily have the most pro sports teams, the SEC in terms of the football aspect is their pro sports. And so I understand the outrage that happens when a coach that has really built Ole Miss up to the level that they are in terms of like a top 10 team currently in the college football playoff rankings. Lane Kiffin built that. Before Lane Kiffin was there, Ole Miss was kind of middle of the road to kind of bottom tier.
It was the school Eli played at.
Exactly.
That's all I knew about Ole Miss.
Yeah. And so even me growing up in Arkansas, you know, early 2010s, we used to beat up on the Rebels every year. And so I understand from the Ole Miss fans' perspective why they would be mad at Lane Kiffin. What I will say is, first of all, Lane Kiffin probably knew that this would happen in terms of the reaction. He had to have known because of the timing of it. But I will also say, I do agree with your sentiment that this is an NCAA issue. And Rick Pitino, the St. John's basketball head coach, talked about this exact thing. It's as if he would leave the St. John's basketball program right before March Madness. And that's basically what has happened here. Ole Miss will probably be in the college football playoff. I know you had something to say about that before the show started when we were talking about this. But it is a detriment to that program. It's always going to be a detriment to Lane Kiffin because he always has had this looming aura about him that he is a troublemaker, I guess you could say. And so
a renegade.
A rebel.
A rebel.
And he feeds into this type of stuff.
Well, because his Twitter account still says he's the head coach of the Ole Miss football as we sit here and talk at 4:33 p.m. right now, which clearly you think is I think it's a little intentional. Why not?
Yeah, you've seen his fiery attitude every time he's at a game. I've seen so many clips about him, but this is an NCAA issue. You cannot have these sort of things happen while the season is going on. We already have this whole thing with the transfer portal being a thing starting in January, right before the college football playoff. And now you're going to be allowing coaches to switch sides right before this happens. And I don't know where you stand in terms of Lane Kiffin asking to still coach the Ole Miss Rebels throughout the playoff, and he ultimately was denied that opportunity by the athletic director of Ole Miss. I think it's perfectly fine, because you're not going to just coach my team and try to recruit them to LSU, right? But this is a whole whirlwind of stuff that has happened in SEC football, and I think this is going to have lasting effects in the landscape of college football for many years to come.
Well, it doesn't stop other big schools from doing this and other aspects of it. It's fascinating to me. Think about like what the SEC meetings are like now when LSU has to sit in the room with Ole Miss among all the other participants in the conference, and they have to decide how to be partners in this thing as a conference, and suddenly you just got, you know, E2 Brute or whatever it is in terms of the backstabbing among themselves, and then they have to turn around and act as partners amongst each other. That's a fascinating dynamic to think about, because let's be honest, that meeting will be interesting when it comes to what the SEC is. But you know, I'm not saying it will devolve into some sort of you know, catastrophic, you know, collapse of anything, but let's be honest with ourselves, it is a charade that the NCAA puts on in terms of them being an organization that controls things here, only in the best interest of whether players are making a little too much money than they should. And now we have a regulation side of things that I'm sure will get challenged in the court in terms of the NIL based off this NIL committee. I'm surprised we haven't even seen it just quite yet in terms of it. But wonder if there could be regulations in terms of the head coaching side as well. But let's be honest, you have to be a special brand of psycho to be a head coach in college football nowadays with the NIL and everything like that. And I know Lane Kiffin is one of those. Certainly is the way it goes, and maybe that's the reason they get paid the way they do. I presented this scenario, and I do it tongue in cheek, and I'm prefacing this now. I do it tongue in cheek because we continue to sit under the construct of the college football playoff, and I have been frank about it. I have been very upfront about it. While I think the college football playoff is a fun product for me to consume as a fan of football and watching it, I don't necessarily really care about the conversation of who should be in and who should not be in, and what teams deserve it versus what teams that do not, because we all know what is being spoken about behind the doors of where the ratings could be and what teams need to be in there and what the balance of power should be in this sport, as opposed to what best teams should be in there. But I presented this scenario in the tongue-in-cheek fashion of, well, if, you know, a couple years ago, a team without its quarterback who got hurt at the tail end of the year wins its conference championship, loses no games, and yet can be left out of a college football, and I'm talking about Florida State being left out of a playoff to a one-loss Alabama team that lost to Texas earlier that year, you could ask to absolutely present the argument that Ole Miss, who does not have any of their coaching staff, literally from 2 days ago when they beat Mississippi State, could argue that, is it going to be the same team that's playing in the playoff, and do they qualify to make it? And I know that's a ridiculous premise to talk about, because clearly Ole Miss deserves to be in there with the way they played, and there's mostly all the players that are still going to be there playing this football game. But can you argue they're going to be the same team that plays that way, based off the criteria that the College Football Playoff Committee already made 2 years ago with Florida State? And does Ole Miss basically play themselves out of this because their coach left, based off the criteria the College Football Playoff Committee decided? And I know the right answer should be Ole Miss should be playing these games, but based off the criteria the NCAA has created themselves and what the College Football Committee's created themselves, they should frankly be out of it.
They definitely have set the precedent with the Florida State situation. What I will say, and what I did tell you, is I think in that situation with the 14 playoff and Florida State being the they were right at the edge. They were not the one or the two seed. I think it's more reasonable that they took Florida State out than it would be if they would have if they would take Ole Miss out. I think Ole Miss is currently sitting at either the sixth or the seventh place in terms of the rankings right now, and to drop them five spots or six spots out of the college football rankings would be asinine, in my opinion, especially with it. With them not having their head coach, not having their offensive coordinator, I still think the likes of Trinidad Chambliss and all of those guys that are playing football for them right now still give them a great shot to win games. And I certainly think that they should be in, but I would not be shocked if they were left out. And that is a crazy thought to really have.
What if Trinidad Chambliss tore his ACL?
Now, I think if we're talking Trinidad Chambliss tore his ACL and Lane Kiffin was still there, I think they would see. I think it's because they are genuinely six spots ahead of the cut that would allow them. Now, if they were, let's say, in Alabama situation where Alabama is currently the 10th place team and they're, I think they would be like the 10th seed, right? If they were sitting there, then I could see a path as to why they would get kicked out if Lane Kiffin wasn't there, if Trinidad Chambliss wasn't there. But since they are the 7 or the 6 seed, I don't remember, I think they will stay. And I think they deserve to stay. Now, could I see them dropping in the rankings? I certainly can.
Yeah. I simply am trying to show the paradox that college football has put itself in.
Yeah, I mean, you're right.
It is a paradoxical situation that they continue to find themselves in. But let's be fair, the NCAA is a hypocritical, paradoxical organization that literally doesn't know how to run its own situation and not know how to run its own sport and cannot call a spade of what a spade is. And it is professional sports at the college level. And it is all bound by subjectivity as opposed to what we see on the product of the football field. That's why the NFL is a beautiful product, regardless of it. It's no committee that allows teams in. We're like, well, we know what the Chiefs' reputation is, and we like their quarterback. Maybe they should get in over the Jacksonville Jaguar. I know they lost to him earlier this year. You know, like,
yeah.
You know, it'd be a very fun exercise. Maybe we do this later this week or something like that. I think about the NFL playoff committee.
That would be interesting.
Wouldn't you want to? Sure. Who really deserves it? Is the Bears really number one? Like, or are we going to put the Bears at like 6 or 7?
I mean, imagine like what the committee would do if they had to think why the Cowboys should be in because they beat the Eagles. Like, that would be an insane process.
They're the only team to beat both teams from the Super Bowl.
Yeah,
last
that
year.
Would be insane.
The Cowboys, and yet, how about Carolina? That's an interesting case. Jeez. You know?
Yeah, that would be very interesting.
Carolina deserve to be over the Niners? Like,
I mean, head to head.
Based on, yeah, that's true. Head to head. That matters. That matters. That's why the NFL is king and college football.
Conference prestige matters. Conference NFC West.
The NFC West, yeah. Are we putting three teams in the AFC South in because of their records, their proximity? 7-5 and 8-4 and 8-4. You know?
It's already hurting my brain.
Yeah. This is great. It'd be a fun exercise.
It would be.
Anyways, Lane Kiffin, go get your bag. I get it. I just get it. If you were in that situation, I mean, if you were Lane Kiffin, I would do it because I know where my best interests lie, which is legacy, resources. Hell, LSU has the damn governor trying to run their athletic organization right now. You know, you can't really say that about Mississippi.
Yeah, it's an interesting prospect because Ole Miss, I think, is set up to be the better roster over the next couple of years and right now. I think LSU is just more of a they're just the bigger name, and therefore that's why Lane. I am going to be interested to see why Lane Kiffin took the LSU job because he kind of gave a non-answer to Marty Smith when he asked him that question in the interview.
Yeah. That was the most ESPN-y segment we've ever done in the history of the show.
The memes were amazing.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we wrap up the show. We'll do daily spread. Hey, my Patriots play tonight against the New York Football Giants. We'll talk about it next on 1430 ESPN. All right, well, Welcome back to Behind the Bench here on 1430 ESPN Fresno. Monday Night Football coming up in moments here, a little bit, 10 minutes or so, 15 minutes or so from now. We head to New England for the battle between the Giants and the Patriots. And we'll take a look at the spread now, the daily spread brought to you by Chancy Gold Resort and Casino. If you're not trying your luck with your teams, try your luck at Chancy Gold Resort and Casino today. Giants and Patriots, 7-point difference today. Patriots are favored and owned by 7 against the 2-10 Giants. The Patriots 10-2. Patriots have just been solid. I would say that is the way to describe them over their 9-game win streak. They have not lost since the Pittsburgh Steelers beat them in Week 3 back in September. Patriots are 1 week away from their bye week. My goodness, I've been waiting for this one for a while too, Tanvir, to be straight up honest. Although, let's be honest,
both of us.
Let's be honest, I've had a lot more fun watching this Patriots team in a long time. Patriots 7-point favorites. I feel like the line's right there. I'm going to go strictly Patriots fans here tonight. My worry is pass rush and the pass protection. Because there's a couple of scary players from the Giants' perspective on the defensive front. My hope is that the Patriots can run the ball effectively to break the pass rush a little bit better, and the Giants get in trouble in that way. I hope Drake May stays on his feet. I hope Drake May doesn't hold on to the football or try to run away too quickly in that aspect. And I would imagine that would be the difference into tonight's game. I think the Patriots defense has an ability to really frustrate Jackson Dart, be opportunistic on the defensive side because Jackson Dart likes to turn the ball over. It's just quite simply what he does as a rookie quarterback right now. And I think there's some opportunistic things out there. I think all in all, I think the matchup makes sense for a Patriots win tonight. But there are some paths that the Giants could take to get to a victory tonight, or at least cover. What is your take on this game tonight?
Yeah, I certainly think that the Patriots should win this game. I think the line is correct. I think with all the injuries that the Giants have had, they're certainly not going to be that same Giants that we've seen, especially early in the year, like when they beat the Philadelphia Eagles. I think this will be a close game in terms of, because Jackson Dart coming back. I think Jackson Dart, while he has had a lot of losses, he's been 2-5 this season so far, he's kept the games close. You know, you see the game against the Bears, it kept that game close before he got hurt. He kept the game against the Broncos very close. And so I think Jackson Dart will be able to get it close. I think if there's a way that the Giants can win, I think it's certainly what you said. I think because of the pass rush with Brian Burns and Kayvon Thibodeau and Dexter Lawrence and all those guys, they can certainly get there. Will Campbell is out for this game, correct? And so that being a big blow to this Patriots offensive line, that is the path for success for the Giants. But overall, Drake May has been playing amazing. This Giants pass defense is not very good. And when you have receivers like Stephon Diggs and Kyle Williams and Hunter Henry playing, and especially Trevon Henderson out of the backfield, I think they can certainly gash the Giants in that aspect. So I think the Patriots will win. Cover, I think it'll be interesting if they do, but it is going to be a Patriots win, in my opinion.
I did not know Brian Burns is the second most sacks this year.
Yeah.
In the NFL behind Myles Garrett, who's
having a very good
19
season.
Brian Burns has 13 sacks. He is 3.5 sacks shy. All right, I was about to say, that's not the most a Giants head player has. I'm pretty sure Strahan has a sack record, but most by a player in a season since JPP in 2011. Okay, I was reading that stat. I was like, I'm pretty sure Strahan famously broke the record, and then everyone got mad because Favre took a dive at the end of that year to give Strahan the record. Patriots' first Monday Night Football game since 2022 when they beat Kyler Murray and the Cardinals, but let's be fair, Kyler tore his ACL like right at the beginning of that game, and I may have never had Kyler be the same after that.
Yep.
It was like the last like good Kyler in a long time. Giants 1-9 in their last 10 Monday night games since 2019.
I remember the one. I certainly do.
You want it? Give it to me real quick?
It was the game against the Packers.
Yep.
And it was right after Thanksgiving as well, I believe.
Week 14, 2023, yes. Against the Packers.
Tommy Cutlets.
Yeah. Was it DeVito?
Was DeVito. That was like when they had that little three-game winning streak.
Do you know where he's at now?
Well, he's off a team.
He's on the other side of the sideline. Yep. He is on the Patriots. Backup. In terms of it, Giants allowed NFL worst 5.93 yards per rush this season right now, which is on pace to be the worst mark by any team in a season over the last 90 years. 90. You think Ramondre and Travion might have a good day today?
Can we be honest here? Let's get this Ramondre situation and move on to the rookie that is playing out of his mind right now, okay? I do not think that Ramondre Stevenson needs to get the level of touches that he gets, but I understand, you know, that coaching staff is putting this Patriots team in the situation to win. They're obviously doing something right. But I would just like to see – I think Travion gives them that explosiveness in the backfield that I don't think that they have with Ramondre. And so I think if we're talking about further on into the season, I think they need to start giving the rock a little bit more to Hendo.
Ramondre does provide good blitz pickup blocking in the backfield. I know Travion's good at it too, but I think – but there's also like a – you got to balance it out. When you throw Henderson in there, you can't just indicate you're going to run. And when you throw Ramondre in there, you can't indicate you're going to pass or anything like that.
Yeah, certainly. But certainly. I just think the splits should be a little bit skewed towards the Trey side.
Yeah. I think the Patriots run the ball very effectively tonight, for real. I think we could be looking at like a 180 kind of night between both backs if we're looking at it. Outside of that, I look forward to this game. I look forward to the Patriots hopefully winning. I'm clearly going to pick the Patriots tonight in terms of that. If they get to 10 wins in a row, this would be the second longest win streak in a single season for a team that had four or fewer wins the previous season. This would be a win shy of the 1999 Colts, who won 11 in a row. Can you name the other team that won 11 in a row after winning only four or fewer in a prior season?
I know the 2019 Niners did not win 11 in a row, but they got that flip. I'm not sure.
It is the 2016 Dallas Cowboys when Dak Prescott took over as a rookie, and that team ripped off 11. And I think eventually finished like 13-3 that year or something crazy like that. Patriots are tied right now for the longest win streak with four win or fewer wins with a team with the Houston Texans of 2018. The Kansas City Chiefs of 2013, and I'm sure you remember the 1975 Indianapolis Colts, or Baltimore Colts.
Yes.
Back then. Yeah, those guys. All right. Did you official prediction? You said Patriots?
Yeah, tonight? I think Patriots win by 10.
Okay. All right. Should be a good one. Show's over. We'll be back tomorrow. Full 3 hours. Should be a fun one. Paul Effer going to join the show tomorrow.
Let's go.
We'll recap Fresno State, and I'm sure we'll have Asa. I'm texting him yet, but I'm sure we'll have him. All right, Tanvir, good job by you.
Yep.
All right. We'll be back tomorrow, like I said, 3 o'clock. Monday Night Football, Patriots-Giants next on 1430.